Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today we'll discuss the article by Chaplot et al. Titled, Chronic Vagal Nerve Stimulation Prevents High-Salt Diet-Induced Endothelial Dysfunction and Aortic Stiffening in Stroke-Prone Spontaneously Hypertensive Rats. This article published May 20th, 2016. Joining me today are Associate Editor Deborah Diz, Lead Author Harold Staus, and Content Expert Doug Martin. Let's get started.
Thank you, Kara. I'm happy to extend my welcome to all of our participants. We're going to be talking today about the paper that focuses on vagal stimulation and alleviation of end organ damage in hypertension. Harold, would you please tell us briefly about the novelty of your recent study?
It has long been known that patients with essential or primary hypertension have high sympathetic tone and low parasympathetic tone. And a lot of research has focused on the sympathetic overactivity in many patients with essential or primary hypertension. But really very little research and treatment strategies are out there to look into this reduced parasympathetic nerve activity that many patients with hypertension have. And so the novelty of our study really is that we hypothesized that if we elevate or restore this reduced parasympathetic tone, that may have some beneficial effects in those patients. Not necessarily lowering the blood pressure in hypertension, but protecting the end organs, the cardiovascular end organs, from damage that occurs with the time course of hypertension.
Thank you. And I'd like to turn to our content expert today, Dr. Doug Martin, and ask him to share his comments about what he thinks the importance of this study reveals.
Thanks, Deb. Happy to do that. I thought this was a really interesting study for a number of reasons, and I'll just highlight a couple, and I think I'll break them down into technological and conceptual aspects. First, I thought this was a technological tour de force to be able to do chronic vagal nerve stimulation, chronically longitudinally monitor blood pressure by telemetry, and then couple that with longitudinal evaluation of endothelial function was, to me, quite remarkable. And so I commend the authors for that approach. The second technological aspect that I was quite intrigued with was the method that they used to assess endothelial function, the long posterior ciliary artery slit lamp approach. Conceptually, I'll echo what Harold just mentioned. I think one of the very innovative aspects of the study is the finding that chronic vagal nerve stimulation improved endothelial function without a change in blood pressure. In the long term, I think this approach might offer the ability to interrupt the pathway between high blood pressure and end organ damage without lowering blood pressure, and so maybe avoid some of those adverse effects, particularly in the elderly population where we have risks of falls and so on if their blood pressure gets too low. And then the second conceptual aspect that I thought was quite interesting was that the beneficial effects on endothelial function appeared to be correlated with changes in IL-6. And IL-6 can have both pro-inflammatory and anti-inflammatory effects. And so it looked like vagal nerve stimulation may be preferentially activating the anti-inflammatory arm of this pathway.
Thank you, Doug. Do you have specific questions that you'd like to ask Harold about the study?
My first question would be about that approach to monitor endothelial function. How technologically challenging is this, and how readily applicable do you think it might be for others in the field to adopt this approach?
The procedure itself is not really that difficult. You need two investigators. One investigator holds the conscious animal in front of the slit lamp and positions the eye in front of the lens of the microscope, so to speak. And the second investigator operates the slit lamp and brings the artery in focus and then takes an image. So it's really not that difficult. There are some limitations. One limitation is that the animals need to be albino. If they are not albino, if they are brown rats, for example, then the iris has a lot of melanin in the iris, and then you cannot see the artery. So it needs to be albino animals. The approach also works in mice. We have done some experiments in mice where we have done the same principle, so that can be applied not only to rats, but also in mice, which may be interesting. And then another very important aspect of the technique is that the long posterior ciliary artery is really a branch of the ophthalmic artery, which is a branch of the internal carotid artery. And as such, the LPCA is really considered a cerebral blood vessel. So with hypertension in mind, this becomes very important, because if you think about stroke, then the LPCA is really considered a cerebral blood vessel, and this is a highly relevant blood vessel in the context of hypertension. Another beauty of the technique is that you can easily apply drugs by just giving them as a corneal application, as eye drops on the cornea, and then you can affect these blood vessels with whatever drugs you want to use.
Does this approach also offer the advantage that these drugs, when they're applied to the cornea like that, really are not absorbed systemically? So we don't have to worry about any systemic responses to the drug application that might induce reflex effects and then complicate the measurements of diameter?
That's correct. At the doses that we give the drugs, we don't really see systemic effects.
Another question I had is, you chose to use the spontaneously hypertensive rat stroke-prone model and place them on a high-salt diet. But I wonder, do you think some of the effects that you observed would have been more pronounced in a less severe model of hypertension?
This brings us a little bit to the mechanisms that may be involved in this vascular protective effect of vagal nerve stimulation. And if we see this as an anti-inflammatory response that is triggered by the vagal nerve stimulation, then it's possible that we kind of prevent the inflammatory process to start with if we have a slowly developing hypertensive animal model. What we believe is going on here is, in that model of severe hypertension, these animals at the beginning of the study have already very high blood pressure, like systolic blood pressure at the beginning of the study was 175. So we assume at that point these animals already have a strong inflammatory component, vascular inflammation, etc. And so at that point, IL-6 levels may already be elevated compared to a normotensive animal. So now what can happen is, if we do the vagal nerve stimulation, that we get an even higher IL-6 level. And that's indicated in this trend towards higher IL-6 levels that we show in the paper. And so now we believe that maybe by increasing IL-6 levels even higher, we get a shift from the pro to the anti-inflammatory pathway.
Great, thank you. In terms of extrapolating this, and I realize this is really early because we're just at the beginning of the basic science investigation for this, but we all know hypertension is really hard to control, and most patients need 2, sometimes 3 drugs, and even then blood pressure is not controlled. So just in a global sense, do you see device therapy like this as perhaps the next new avenue for treatment of hypertension, particularly in those difficult to control cases?
It's probably a little early at that point to make that conclusion, but it's certainly a possibility. So device-based treatment of hypertension is a hot topic right now. If you think about baroreceptor stimulation, renal denervation, and those type of techniques, I still think it's important to lower the blood pressure. And with the vagal nerve stimulation, we don't really see the lowering of the blood pressure, but we see these protective effects. So maybe this vagal nerve stimulation in combination with some other techniques that lower the blood pressure, and that could be pharmacologic or device-based techniques, may be an ideal approach, because we know now that lowering blood pressure does not necessarily prevent organ damage. But then adding the vagal nerve stimulation to get an additional organ protective effect may be really something that needs further studies. So even if the acute vagal nerve stimulation does not lower the blood pressure, the beneficial vascular effects that we get with the vagal nerve stimulation may eventually, if we look more chronically, like after maybe 2-3 months, may have a blood pressure effect.
Harold, I wanted to follow up on the question of the inflammation. Do you think that the benefits of having the intermittent vagal stimulation could be due to the switch to the anti-inflammatory effects that might then be considered to act over a longer period of time?
This is a very important question. I think studies that try to optimize the stimulation parameters and the timing of the stimulation are very important. And those type of studies need to be done to bring this type of technique into the clinics. And so it's possible that it's really enough to stimulate maybe only during the night to avoid side effects of the stimulation during the day. And then the effects would still be there because we stimulate a slow response. The cellular responses are really slow responses. And so it may be possible to find optimal stimulation timing where we can do both optimize the effects but also reduce the side effects that the patients may encounter with the treatment.
I also wanted to follow up on the clinical implications of your study. I was wondering about your technique for the LPCA. Is that able to be done in a human, or is the albino effect that you mentioned, you know, necessary for looking in the human eye and assessing real-time changes in the endothelial function there?
Well, in humans, the LPCA would not be visible if it's not an albino. But in humans, you have much, you have different techniques available. Like you could use flow-mediated dilation in the forearm to study vascular function easily, and this is well established. Or you could go with the blood vessels in the retina, and those are accessible in humans more easily. In the rat, it would be difficult to image the retina and the blood vessels in the retina, but in humans that hold still, it's easy to measure the vascular responses in the blood vessels of the retina. But I think for vascular function studies in humans, the forearm flow-mediated vasodilation is really the way to go.
Except as you pointed out, the eye gives you the benefit of having a cerebral vessel. And so again, looking from that perspective, it might be nice to see more of the retinal vessels studied.
This is true.
I'd like to thank you both for participating in this podcast, highlighting the new findings related to vagal stimulation and protection of target organs from the hypertensive damage. And we congratulate Dr. Staus and his colleagues for providing this new and useful information in our journal. Thank you.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circ podcast. For more podcasts, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.